Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A main, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game.
Hey, now it's the Mike and JD show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Solid, man. We're going back to work tomorrow. I'm a teacher, and it's like, oh man, I've been off for over 2 weeks. I don't know if I know how to do my job anymore. So.
Yeah, I worked a little bit over the last 2 weeks, but for the most part, I haven't had much to do because everybody's been gone and a lot of my work is driven by other people. So I've just been kind of like chilling. I'm kind of like excited to get back to work because I've just been bored as hell, man. It's going to be a nice change of pace to actually have a full-time job again.
Well, it's like, I have not been bored, like with wrestling and stuff. We're so busy. Like, I think we've had 5 or 6 different events in the last 2 weeks, and we've hosted most of them. So it's like, it's been a thing. Like I gave my kid the last 2 weeks off of competition. So he didn't have to do anything. He did play some soccer, but we didn't go to any tournaments or anything like that. So it's just been, I'm kind of looking forward to getting back into my routine. I teach most of my classes are semester classes. So I have a brand new crop of kids tomorrow, starting all over again with my classes. So should be interesting.
Yeah, man. So I wanted to tell you, because I know you used to work for Monster Jam or something like that, right?
I did TV commercials for Monster Jam, Supercross, Arena Cross, PBR, Pro Bowl Running, not Pabst Blue Ribbon. Yeah. What else I do stuff for? Yeah, my back. It's now Feld Motorsports, but when I worked for them, they were part of Live Nation.
Okay. So we went to, and I didn't know this existed, but I just got like a Facebook ad. Hot Wheels does a monster truck show, like a touring monster truck show. So I got a Facebook ad, and my kids, both of them, love like Hot Wheels and they love like little monster trucks. And so my family and my cousin's family, we all bought tickets and sat together at the Spectrum Arena in Charlotte. And it was a really fun show. It was really cool. I'd never been to a monster truck show before, but everybody loved it, man. It was really awesome.
Do they have like Gravedigger and Monster Mutt on there and stuff like that? Like, what were the trucks?
They have their own trucks. The only one that was they created all. I think they could look. I'm not a monster truck like aficionado, to be honest with you, but they I believe they created only trucks with the exception of a legacy truck they had was Bigfoot. I think
Bigfoot
from when I
yeah.
was
a kid. When I worked, so like when I interviewed for this, and again, I left there 18 years ago. So I was there. This is the very beginning of my career. My first big boy job was with Live Nation. And when I interviewed, they talked about monster trucks, Gravedigger. I said, oh, yeah, like Bigfoot. And I got the fucking stare. Apparently, Bigfoot and them had had a massive falling out in like the 90s, like the early 90s. And Bigfoot like does his own thing from like the traditional Monster Jam circuit. So, yeah, that was when you said Bigfoot, it was like, oh, yeah, oh, persona non grata.
Yeah. It's weird. And they did the introductions at the beginning. They had this guy named Bone Shaker, and he's like a villain. He's like talking smack to the other drivers, but you could tell it's like all a work. But the kids were, dude, the kids were really getting into it. Unfortunately, my son's too young. We misread the situation. So once like the first monster truck comes out, he's like scared. He starts crying. So my wife has to take him to the atrium outside, and we had earmuffs for him. So we're like, he'll have earmuffs. He'll be fine. But no, it just like the reverberations just scared him. So my wife was with him on the outside for like 75% of the show. He ended up passing out on the outside in the atrium area. But everybody else loved it, though.
I believe you gave me shit for bringing a 6-year-old to a professional wrestling show back in the day.
I gave you shit because I'm pretty sure Darby tried to kill himself and carve himself up. I think that's why I made fun of you.
It was a dynamite, but yeah, he probably did. I don't even remember. we went to World's End. I think I was talking about last week, and like he goes, Dad, how many of these shows have we been to? And the truth of the matter is we lost count. It's like 15 or something like that, man.
Yeah.
Oh, the king has chimed, and I have to put this up. The King of the North says, JDM, 5 chapters into Gaijin and loving it so far. Thanks, man. I'm really proud of that book. It's probably the best book I've ever written. And yeah, I love hearing those things.
I'm so glad that somebody got that for the King. I think more people should buy that book and give it as a gift. It doesn't have to be for Christmas. I think you should just buy it anyway and gift it to somebody. I think that'd be great.
I agree. I agree with that. I'm very proud of that book. I should, I don't know. Everyone keeps pushing me to make that a series. And I'm like, I don't know. If you read the book, it's very, very hard to make that into a series. But I don't know. Maybe I should re-explore that at some point. I do want to get more into writing this year again. I miss writing, and I just got out of the habit of it with grad school. Now that I'm done with grad school, I want to do something creative again.
Yeah. And King also asked, he said, how was the Wrestle Kingdom viewing? It was fun. We're gonna get into Wrestle Kingdom and Seg 2. So Seg 1 banter, or and then Seg 2 was gonna be the Vince McMahon stuff, because JD and I are gonna in real time try to understand this. You know, we should have asked BJ to come on.
We should have asked BJ to come on.
Yeah, and you know, I think he's been wanting to come back on anyway, so, and this would have been a perfect story for him to come on, but JD and I are going to try to understand this in real time, and then we're going to talk about some Wrestle Kingdom. I literally just finished the show. I was a couple minutes late because I was still watching the show, and I was like, I had to go wipe my eyes because something happened during the post that got to me, and I was like, damn it, oh, I'm too old, I shouldn't be so emotional. It's like, this is just phony ass wrestling, why am I getting emotional?
Because it's good fiction, man. Yeah. I hate when people say that. Like,
I know,
stuff of good fiction can move you. I remember one of our friends nameless said, man, I got teary-eyed at the end of your book, and I'm like, why? Like, I mean, I wrote it, I didn't even feel that way, but made me happy that somebody like got me like that.
Yeah.
And that what I wrote got to him. So like, it's nothing wrong with that. Like, I get emotional watching like movies and stuff that I care about all the time. Like, and bro, if something hits you, man, something hits you.
Bro, I got emotional during fucking Running Man. It's just like,
you too.
There's a scene in the airplane. I don't want to give it away. I don't want to spoil it, but you know exactly where I'm going.
Uh-huh.
There's a big revelation that happens in the airplane, like kind of like towards the end of the movie. And the actor, God, I can never remember his name.
Glenn Powell. Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell. He plays Ben Richards in the movie. And he does such a damn good job, and it totally sells it. And Josh Brolin, from the Goonies legend, Josh Brolin, is such a good villain in the movie. They totally got me hook, line, and sinker. I was like, oh man, that's like, that was a good twist to the movie. And I really enjoyed, and that was a really good movie. Good recommendation by you, JD. Cause I honestly was not going to give that one a chance.
We haven't talked about that since you've seen that movie. Did you like were you as into it? Because it seems like the world hates this movie, and me and my buddy Joe are on an island on this. I really feel that way. No, I feel like I've misread America.
I really enjoyed it. There was one part that wasn't for me, and I'll tell you probably offline, because again, I don't want to get into spoilers or anything like that. But I thought it was a great, but look, for me, I like action movies. I prefer action movies to most other movies. Like, I'm an action movie. I'm a comedy guy. I like heist movies. You know what I mean? Like, I love thrillers like that. That's more my thing. And then like next rung down is like comedy, and then thriller, and then like horror movies. And then dramas are usually like last.
I'm saying,
although I can get into some dramas, don't get me wrong. But for the most part, I'm like, give me a 90-minute action movie and I'm happy. Right. Give me like Sylvester Stallone and Escape Plan. It's stupid, but I love it. Right. Like, just give me dumb shit like that.
Dude, I actually like this Running Man better than the Arnold one. And I love that Arnold movie. Like, I just, yeah. I don't know. This one, I think Ben Richards being a dad and that being his motivation for everything really hit me in my core. Like, I really felt it more than Arnold, because Arnold is just like a revenge story. Really, it's very Arnold, and I enjoy the movie for what it is. It's fun, don't get me wrong. But this one, I don't know, it got to me. And plus, being a Kinghead, the fact that a good chunk of the movie takes place in Derry, Maine, I was like, fuck yeah, man.
Yeah.
There's a clown under there, you know.
yeah. No, that's awesome. All right, let's get into the our main topic.
Mike, I would be a bad person if I didn't take this opportunity. Okay. The King also says, my birthday may or may not be coming up on January 30th. My sister's looking for gift ideas. Can JD recommend me others similar to this one that I can send her? I'm gonna be real with you, bro. There ain't no one that's ever written a book like Gaijin. I wrote Gaijin because there ain't nothing like this. If you're looking for more of my stuff, my Amazon page is up. Like, if you just like my writing, feel free. But if you're looking for something cool with wrestling, Aubrey Sitterson has a comic book that I really like called The Comic History of Pro Wrestling. That's an excellent, excellent graphic novel history of pro wrestling. There's a map that floats around on Twitter sometimes of the territories all drawn up and divided. It's really, really good. I highly, highly recommend that. I think it's an excellent book. Other than that, I don't... Wrestling fiction. I know Paul O'Brien wrote some books about
10 years. But I kind of dug. I didn't never finish the Blood Red Turns Dollar Green books. Yeah, but what I read of them, I really enjoyed. So if that's what you're looking for, is a crime story about pro wrestling, Blood Red Turned Dollar Green. I think Gaijin's better, to be honest with you. That's not me being biased. I was able to finish Gaijin. I was not able to finish Blood Red Turns Dollar Green. but I think they're both really. I think they're good though.
Yeah, I be honest with you, I wrote Gaijin because I never read anything like it. Like, I thought that there should be a book like this. So I cannot, and I'm not just being cocky when I say this, I don't think there's a book like Gaijin on the market. So, yeah. But there's plenty of J.D. Oliva books on the market, should you visit Amazon.
Yeah, for sure. But I would recommend Blood Red Turns Dollar Green. If I don't finish a book, that's not a knock on the book. That's because I'm not much of a reader. It's hard for me to fall. Like, I read Jonathan Snowden's Ken Shamrock book. And when I tell you, that's one of the greatest books I've ever read in my life. It absolutely was. It took me like 6 months to finish it because I just start them and I forget. And then I come back to them later. That's just how I am with books.
Snowden rubs people the wrong way online. Like, it's been a while since I've interacted with him, but he's an excellent writer. Like, he's written some really, really good books. He does have a series of like a novella, like pro wrestling fiction novellas that are out there. I forget what they're called. They might be called Tales from the Territory. I forget. Those are some of those. It's a collection of novellas by different writers. Some of those are pretty good if you're interested in that kind of thing. Some of them I didn't care as much for as the others, but there's some of those books I'm like, damn, that's pretty good. So Snowden's nonfiction books are fantastic. There's so many great wrestling nonfiction books out there. Can't say enough good thing about that.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Now we'll get to the main topic at hand. So JD and I are going to actually learn this in real time because I read it and I didn't quite think I understood it completely, or I understood it, but I didn't understand why it was bad. So me and JD are going to figure this out together, but let me go to my summary here. So in his recent article for Post Wrestling, Brandon Thurston details new evidence from an ongoing shareholder lawsuit that suggests the merger between WWE and Endeavor was far more pre-wired than previously believed. The report, based on an unsealed court document, centers on the idea that Endeavor executives not only expected Vince McMahon to return after his 2022 resignation, but actively courted him to ensure they were his preferred buyer, which sounds like just normal to me. I think the issue that I can see is that Vince McMahon's retirement, and it's in the title, was a complete sham. So he like all the information comes out about what's happened with the not the latest stuff that comes, the stuff that comes out later the following year with all the seedy and just disgusting stuff with the dolls and the poop and the sex trafficking and all that stuff. Like, this is just like he has a lot of NDAs with former female employees, right? And so and allegations of coercion and things like that, right? And so he retires, and Stephanie McMahon comes out and announces that he's retired, and then they all cheer his name and all that stuff. And as it turns out, like, that same day, he's texting with Mark Shapiro, who is now like the head guy over at TKO, like underneath Ari Emanuel. Mark Shapiro at the time, this is 2022, was working in Endeavor. He's the top guy there. And Mark Shapiro and Vince are texting about it. And then he tells another one of his guys that Nick Khan and Stephen McMahon are going to take over, and then Vince is going to come back, and then he's going to either take the company private, or he's going to sell the company, and he's probably going to sell it to us. And he says the courtship is on. So Vince retired he already had this lined up. Like, the idea was, I'm going to retire now, the company's going to save face, and then I'm going to come back when the heat dies, and then I'm going to put the company up for sale. I'm going to sell it to these guys who I trust, because they're going to keep me in power. And the shareholder lawsuit is about WWE not selling to the highest bidder. They sold to a preferred buyer who would keep Vince in charge. I don't know. I don't think it's like weird to sell your company if you think it's going to be in the best possible hands and that you get to keep your hands in it. Like, I don't really understand like how they could get money out of this lawsuit, but again, I don't know the laws, so
I don't need, and this is why I kind of want BJ around, because we just talked a couple weeks ago about Warner, and I'm sure that, and I forget that if the Warner Discovery board has once again poo-pooed Larry Ellison's bid, but they're going to, they don't want to do business with him. And on paper, they're the highest bidder. Now, they'll come back and say, no, it's not the highest bidder because all the money is shady and funny, but all money is shady and funny. So, I mean, like, that's a case there of a company not selling to the highest bidder. And we have this idea that all companies should sell to the highest bidder, even when it's not in the best interest of a company. And so I think we've seen it into, like, I mean, who are the other buyers that were interested? I mean, like,
Liberty Media was one of them, and they're a fairly big media group, but you know, maybe Vince didn't trust them. There were rumors that Saudi was going to buy
it. I remember that. The more surprising part is that it didn't really leak, right? There was no real big talk of UFC Endeavor, you know, being involved in this until the deal was announced. And then everybody went, oh, that makes sense. Like, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to get much out of this lawsuit. Of everything going on with WWE right now, I don't know. Maybe I don't know enough. I wish BJ was on this show.
Yeah, it seems like small potatoes to me. So I got some actual details that I'll just go over, that way we don't sound like we're making shit up. But so Mark Shapiro, so on July 22nd, the very day Vince McMahon announced his retirement, then Endeavor, now TKO president Mark Shapiro, sent a text to colleagues predicting exactly what would happen. He stated that Nick Khan and Stephanie would run things for 9 months, and after which Vince would return with a new board, take the company private, or sell it specifically to Endeavor. A pre-wired merger. The article highlights a quote from Liberty Media's Greg Maffei, who described the eventual merger as pre-wired. So Liberty Media is the one suggesting this. This suggests that while WWE publicly claimed to be conducting wide-reaching strategic review to find the best buyer, the fix may have been in for Endeavor from the start. Documents show that Ari Emanuel and Vince McMahon were arranging an in-person meeting in a New York steakhouse as early as August 10th, 2022, less than 3 weeks after Vince, quote-unquote, retired. This underscores a level of back-channel communication that contradicts the narrative of a clean break between Vince and the company. The greatest partner promise. So the title of the article refers to a sentiment shared between the executives that Endeavor would be the only partner willing to keep Vince in a position of power. Other potential suitors like Disney or Comcast would have likely required Vince to stay away due to sexual misconduct allegations. But Ari Emanuel reportedly assured that Vince would remain involved. So Ari basically worked Vince, which is kind of fitting, I think, that Vince is the ultimate worker, ended up getting worked.
If you live, how's that line from The Dark Knight goes? You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Like, this is like Vince is like that with the Carney. Like Ari Emanuel out Carneyed the king of the Carneys.
Yeah.
Right? That's impressive. And like, it makes me wonder if this, because remember, there was a lot of heat. I think we did a show about the Saudi thing. Like, when it might have been an old Brace for Impact show. I forget.
Well, but so there were a lot of people out there. They were putting that Saudi information out there, and Body Slam. Like, those poor guys, they ran with it like it was the truth.
I think Fightful did too, though, didn't they?
No, the Fightful quoted Body Slam, but they would never. Okay. They were never willing to put their name on it. Neither was the Observer. And Brian Alvarez even said, a lot of people are telling me this, but I don't know that it's true. Because enough people are putting out the information that it almost seemed like it was like they're just trying to get that out there as like kind of their own swerve for who the real buyers are going to be.
Yeah, which I think in retrospect, that's probably what it was, because that smells like Legentil activity. Right, yeah. that enough of that stuff got out there just to kind of chase away something like this. I mean, like, you can, I mean, like, that's the thing, is you don't have to sell to the highest bidder, right? I know that we got some in the comments saying, well, they didn't do their financial due diligence. I mean, like, that's the thing, though, is they can say they did their financial due diligence. All they had to do was entertain offers. You don't have to go with the highest bidder. Like, no, you can say, though, the fix was in from the jump, but that's just courtship, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is how businesses are done. Like, I don't... Well,
and
I'm not seeing this.
And Vince could like absolutely say, I had similar conversations with lots of companies. I was getting this information out there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That he could easily say that. But again, we're not legal experts. So
no. Again, what's the drawback? It's not like they're going to force them to dissolve TKO. Like, the whole thing is going to be they're going to look to do a settlement with some of these.
No. So here, I did pull it up. So what this can mean for TKO. So if the Delaware Court of Chancery finds that the board breached its duties, so its fiduciary duties to sell to the highest bidder, here's what the consequences could be. So they could face financial penalties. So if the court determines that shareholders would have received, for example, $110 per share from a different buyer, but only received the equivalent of $95 per share through the Endeavor merger, TKO, the defendants could be ordered to pay the difference. Given the billions involved, this could result in a settlement or judgment in the hundreds of millions of dollars. It also could result in a discovery of more toxic info, which would be tough for them, because you know they got a lot of shit going on that they're protecting. So essentially, the lawsuit is arguing that WWE was not sold to the highest bidder. It was sold to Vince's protector. If the plaintiffs prove this, TKO might be looking at a massive payout to disgruntled shareholders. And the clean image the company has tried, in quotes, to build post-Vince could be further tarnished by unearthing of internal secrets from 2022 and 2023, the comeback era, which more information has come out since then. That Vince, like as early as 2023, was already back in like head of creative, which we knew at the time. But now, like these text messages and this information is actually essentially confirmed all the reports from Meltzer and Sean Rossap and those guys.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just a jaded asshole when it comes to these corporate things. Like, I just don't see it happening. Because that the heat is on. 76 says the TKO stock price is through the roof.
Yeah, it's almost doubled since then. So I don't understand like how they, and like, look, nobody wants to see these guys go down more than me and JD. I just don't see it. These shareholders, it seems like a petty lawsuit, and the shareholders might get something. But again, I don't know that, you know, the article did say that there was a smoking gun involved. I didn't really see that there was a smoking gun here.
And it could be just because we're idiots and we just
Yes. Always understand that when JD and I are talking about this stuff and we forget, legitimately, I forgot to invite BJ because I came up with a format exactly 20 minutes before we went on the air because I was watching Wrestle Kingdom. Assume that we don't know what we're talking about, but we're just putting the information out there. And I get the feeling that a lot of you guys are like us, that you don't really understand shit. Like when it comes to like fiduciary duties and all that, like you would think I would know more considering I work for one of the largest financial institutions in the world, but this is not what I do for a living. So,
dude, this is between the Mike and JD show. Most podcasts is we're not going to pretend to understand this. I don't think most people talking about this thing really understand these kind of things. Like, whatever.
Yeah. My favorite part of this is from Lady B. My favorite part of the suit was mentioning Vince growing on TikTok. What a strange concept. There was also a text exchange between Vince and Nick Khan discussing the finish of WrestleMania. And Nick Khan responds to him, Lansig. And Vince is like, what in the blue hell is Lansig? And he goes, read it backwards. He goes, ah, signal. And then Vince is like texting emojis and emojis and LOL and all that stuff. And I'm like, he's like 80. It's like, dude, what? I couldn't imagine.
He's telling him to message him on Signal, but he's doing it. If he'd have done it in like Carney, Vince might have gotten it. Like, how do we do it in Carney? Like,
they do it backwards. He did it in Carney, but Vince didn't understand it.
They got the Izzle or something like shit like that. Like,
yeah, Signal.
Signal. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Because no one will figure that one out either. Carney. The best part about this is it's just true proof of how old Vince has gotten kind of out of touch. Because he was, man, back in the day, he was so much sharper than everybody else. And like, man, time comes for us all. As I keep hearing in this Stevie Nicks song that's on every meme in the world now.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Next story. So I just finished Wrestle Kingdom. Let me just say, I watched the final two matches. I have not watched the entire show. So I'm not going to judge the show as a whole. I think that would be inappropriate. But I watched the final two matches because that's really all I cared about. Because I have been kind of out on New Japan for, I want to say, the better part of a year, maybe a year and a half.
Ditto.
And tonight's, the final two matches were amazing. It also reminded me why I'm no longer really invested all that much into New Japan, because all the top stars that I loved in New Japan now work for AEW. And it was evident after the Tanahashi retirement match was over. And one by one, a current AEW star that used to be a main eventer in New Japan came out to thank Tanahashi. It was really quite sad. It was, you know, Will Ospreay, Kenny Omega, Ibushi, Shibata. Oh, dude, the fucking Shibata one got me, man. As soon as Shibata's music hits, and like,
I love that.
Yeah, music. You just, first of all, Japanese entrance songs are way better than American.
But always have been, always will be.
Yeah. But Shibata's music hits, and immediately Tanahashi starts crying, and old Mike starts to get a little emotional, and something was happening, and I didn't understand like why there's water. I was like, God damn it, I gotta get myself together before I get on this podcast. But he comes out and he hands Tanahashi some flowers, and then immediately like gets in his face, takes his shirt off, and they just start fighting. Like they lock up and start doing chest slaps, and then they gave each other a big hug. Jay White was another one. Jay White was there, and you know, Keiji Muto was there, obviously, and there were several others. I think I think Tenru might have been there, but it was quite shocking to see all those, like, especially like their current still big stars that used to be on these New Japan shows. It was Tatsumi Fujinami. Thank you, King. Tatsumi Fujinami. Yeah, sorry. I was trying to fast forward through some of it so I can get to the show. But it was just quite shocking to see. But I got to say, the main event, Tanahashi's retirement, this might be a hot take, guys. This might be a hot take. The match between Okada and Tanahashi, well, a little bit better than Gunther and John Cena. just by a lot.
I don't think it has much value anymore because it's been destroyed. But cage match currently rates it as the highest match of all time. That was before the show. I don't know if that's going to stay like that. But before the show started, it was literally the highest rated match of all time at a 9.83.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a good conversation over the weekend about cage match ratings and star ratings, and we'll actually finish on that. I think you and I should talk about that. It was a good conversation.
But I'd love to.
Yeah, but the match was just fantastic, and it was evident that it was time for Tanahashi to go. He was not moving around too well, and he has not been in a long time. Not been
for a long time, yeah.
Yeah, I was happy to see him go. The way they did it was fantastic. They, you know, like he was out on a chariot, and like all the former wrestlers and former rivals came down to give him flowers and pay respects to him. And then the match, he did his tributes to Shibata, and he did tributes to Nakamura. Naito came out at one point, newest Noah wrestler, Naito. Oh, JD, that fucking Naito match and Noah, brutal, dude. Just like one of the saddest things you'll ever see in your life.
Naito, I hate this internet phrase, but I'm going to use it right now. Naito is washed.
Yeah.
Like, and has been. And has been for a while. That's when he wanted money, and New Japan was like, no. So he's going to go make some cyber fight money. Or no, sorry, Abima money. Pardon me, Abima money. Ah, Naito, man.
Yeah.
He only get dropped in your neck so many times.
Dude, so here is this is, I need to like, be more prepared when I tweet, but I typically tweet the first thing that comes to mind. I'm watching the Noah show, and because I heard the Naito was there, so I'm watching the Noah show, and then like they did this big grand entrance for Naito. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. Noah does a great job with that stuff.
Oh, they do.
Yeah, and their video production is like better than everybody's right now. Mm-hmm. It has been, but they're tremendous, right? So I do a screenshot because I'm watching it on my iPad. I do a screenshot and I tweet it out. I was like, oh, Naito's in Noah now, and I'm here for it. I was like, this is awesome. And then the bell rings, and I don't tweet for like 3 hours because I get caught up doing something else. And then I come back and I finish the match, and I was like, this match sucked. And then I quote tweeted that. I was like, yep, was not good. And then that guy, our friend Jeremy Finestone, who was front row for that, mm-hmm. got a kick out of that. But Noah is in a sad state right now if Naito's coming in to be their top star. And he was still over. He was still Naito, right? Everybody, the crowd loved him. But boy, oh boy, was he not moving well.
I'm going to tell you this. Noah was a company that was led by Keiji Muto 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? Muto was the world champion of Noah not too long ago. That global honor crown was on a man who has to get around in a wheelchair most of the time. So
yeah,
this is kind of what Noah is, man.
Yeah, it is. But still, even then, like, I still liked some of Muto's stuff during that run. But I just don't see Naito being able to do anything at the level that Muto was doing. And Muto was much older. Like, Naito just dropped off. Seemed like overnight almost. You know, he had the one good match with Moxley, I think, last year for the title. And then they had a follow-up match, and it was terrible. And I think people trying to put the heat on Moxley. Yeah, it was 2 years ago. Yeah, I think people trying to put the heat on Moxley, but then they shortly realized, like, shortly after that, Naito was cooked.
Let's be real. The wrestling fans on Twitter specifically will shit on an American wrestler to protect a Japanese wrestler any chance they get, especially the Puro fans. Like, anything American is bad.
Yeah.
All, you know, everything gets like sanctified. And I like Japanese wrestling too. But sometimes people are a little over the top with how, oh, Moxley's terrible, and then, you know, Naito can't walk. It's a little much. Like, these are the same kind of people that were actually angry that Shinsuke Nakamura wasn't going to wrestle Tanahashi. Like, how dare Tony Khan not let a TKO employee take over their show? How dare they? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like, Tony Khan had anything to do with that. Like, some people still believe it. I have not seen any evidence. Nobody's come out and said it. I think people that just, for whatever reason, are having a trouble believing that WWE just told Nakamura no. That he can't go because it's a rival promotion that works with AEW. They had to come up with some fakakta bullshit scenario that somehow Tony Khan said, no, Nakamura can't do it. And I was like, Tony Khan's the only guy that probably would let Nakamura do. Like, he would, like, I think that he would say, yeah, I don't care. Why would I care?
So here's the thing is, we as wrestling fans have grown up with the Stockholm syndrome when it comes to WWE. And there's a lot of fans that, you know, Tony Khan did not make a lot of fans early on. And like, I get if you don't like Tony Khan as a person, even as a booker, whatever. The fact that people are so willing to trumpet up any problems with Tony Khan and ignore anything Vince McMahon or Triple H or any of the problems these other people have had for decades. It just, it's just, like I said, it's Stockholm syndrome, right? Yeah. And the fact that it even, that it festers into the Purosphere is even more wild to me. Like AEW is in a stronger place financially than New Japan is. And it just, that's the econ, that's economics. Like, Japanese wrestling is not in the place that it was in 2017, 2018. It just isn't.
Yeah.
Like, and this is the way these partnerships go. It would be like that if they're partnering up with WWE. Yoda Tsuji can say, hey, man, I don't like Tony Khan. I don't like AEW. That's fine. You know, yeah. They don't, it's probably mutual. Tony don't bring him in either. Like, of all the guys they bring in, Yoda Tsuji has not been one of them. I don't think Tsuji's been one.
I think he's been there before, but I think, you know what? Like, I don't mind what you, so if you guys are,
Yeah.
If you guys don't know what we're talking about, there's an interview on the New Japan website that seemed like it was part kayfabe and part not, where Yoda Tsuji basically disparaged AEW, saying he didn't really want them around. That anybody understands why Okada is in the main event, but he would have rather seen Tanahashi lose to a New Japan wrestler. Because I think it's okay to have,
because that's why it would, there's no one else but him. It would have been him. That's
the one. Yeah. But guys, I'm going to say something controversial. I think it's okay to have pride in your company and to think that you could actually do well on your own. Even though it might not be true, but I think if you're a competitive person and you're a driven person, that you want that. And I think that a lot of New Japan wrestlers and New Japan probably execs and fans see AEW as a company that's coming in and poaching all their stars, right? And then you see the end of the Tanahashi match, and it's Jay White, it's Okada, it's Will Ospreay. Shibata's different and Ibushi's different, but they're there with AEW too. You know, it's like it was one after one after one after another. And it is all these guys that left New Japan and they're now in AEW. There's a lot of extenuating circumstances to why that is. It's not like it was a predatory thing. These are just business deals. But, you know, I could see why you would think that. So, like, I think it's okay if, like, New Japan's your team and you're on that team like Yoda Tsuji, that you're like, look, we don't need these guys around. We can do this shit ourselves. Like, they can go do their thing and we can do our annual show together. But we don't need Takeshi, an outsider, coming in and holding our championship. I think it's okay to say that.
I agree. I understand, especially he's trying to be the guy, right? It's very clear that Yoda Tsuji, people had tabs him to be the guy. And like, it's no secret that a lot of people had a lot of hope in that generation of dojo talent.
Yeah.
And it has not panned out. Really, like, and again, part of its problem is probably Gato hadn't pulled the trigger on anybody, right? And like, and here's the thing too, is you can sit there and say, well, look at all these guys that, well Ospreay's a Rev Pro guy, right? Jay White's from New Zealand. Okada did not start his career in New Japan, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, all these guys moved to New Japan because it was better opportunities. None of those guys were New Japan true dojo guys. Like, Jay White trained in, oh, my light just died. Jay White trained in the dojo, like, after he had been a pro for a while. Like, so this is just the nature of business, right? Yeah. It just kind of
guys move companies all the time. You know, King makes a good point, and I'm going to counterpoint him, because he's also one of these guys that makes fun of TNA when WWE signs their talent. He says all these problems are with poaching are fixed, and New Japan paid these guys money. New Japan doesn't have the money to pay them, so it's not like they're being cheap. They just can't afford to pay them. But right. It's the same situation with TNA and WWE. WWE signing these people, and TNA can't do a goddamn thing about it, right? And TNA is not going to stand in the way.
I'm gonna fix my light real quick. Give me one second. Continue.
Okay. But since we're on the topic of Yoda Tsuji, I watched the Yoda Tsuji defeat Kanosuke Takeshita, and that match was awesome. I personally think I liked Okada Tanahashi better. Now, some of the younger people think that would probably say that it was Takeshita and Yoda Tsuji was the better one, but I was more emotionally invested in the Tanahashi match, so I don't really care that they were moving a little slower. I don't need all of that, but I did love the Takeshita and Yoda Tsuji match. And I'm so glad that they finally put the belt on Yoda Tsuji. He's a guy that I'm really interested in following. And, he might bring me back to New Japan a little bit more often. I only watched a handful of matches this last year in New Japan. And for all the reasons that I said earlier, they lost all their greatest stars. And so, and like this young crop coming up, Just hadn't really done it for everybody. But Yota Tsuji was a guy that I thought would be interesting as a top wrestler. And he's finally made it. I'm curious to see where it goes. Now, unfortunately, what they did after the match, so they have this amazing match, and they finally crown Yota Tsuji. He defeats him with a fucking lion tamer, a Boston crab. And it was awesome, don't get me wrong. And Takeshita submits, and look, they put Yota Tsuji over. Like, that's how you put him over, right? You fucking submit in the middle of the ring, and then you get out of the ring after the match is over. And that's what they did. But then, unfortunately, fucking Jake Lee comes in and attacks Yota Tsuji, and I got no interest in Jake Lee. Like, Jake, he's been around a long time. Yeah, he was an All Japan guy. He'd had a run in Noah, and now he's in New Japan. And I'll be honest, I forgot that he was in New Japan because, like I said, I'm not watching a ton. And he comes in and just attacks him, and I'm just like, oh my god! I just kind of rolled my eyes. Like, I'm not really interested in seeing Yota Tsuji versus Jake Lee.
That's a dark state of New Japan for pushing. I'm a huge Kenta Miyahara fan. Love Kenta Miyahara. I watched him carry Jake Lee to a lot of really good matches, but Jake Lee is a zero on charisma.
Yeah.
And always has been. Like, he's a guy, you look at him, you should be.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Look, we all have things going on in our lives that prevent us from being the best versions of ourselves. The new year doesn't require a whole new you, maybe just a better version of you that understands what's weighing you down and holding you back. Therapy can help to give an unbiased perspective and help identify what's holding you back and what's weighing you down and better understand all of your relationships, motivations, and emotions. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the United States. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 5 million people globally. And it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
You should be the guy. He should be all right. He just isn't.
No. I think maybe like his lack of facial expression is part of the gimmick, but he doesn't emote on the TV. So it always seemed like everything he does, that he doesn't really care. And maybe that's the gimmick, but if you don't care, neither do I. Right. Because, mm-hmm. You know, Naito used to do the gimmick where he doesn't give a shit, but he was doing it and he was cool. Like, and yeah, it worked. I don't think that Jake Lee is doing this gimmick where he doesn't give a shit. I just think he's just kind of out there and the doesn't know how to emote.
The difference between the two is Naito can act like he doesn't give a fuck, and that's the tranquilo thing, and he's aloof. But when he puts it into gear, like old school Naito, when push came to shove and it was time to go, that guy could find another gear. Jake Lee never gets out of second gear, ever.
Yeah.
Good kicks, great kicks, but yeah, just never gets to that next level. Never has.
Yota Tsuji beat the DDT guy. No, this is one of the top stars in AEW. He beat the AEW guy with the New Japan Young Lions submission. the night before, Takeshita was doing some stuff. I'm not going to be mean, but he was doing some DDT stuff and it was quite vulgar and sexualized. Sure. And I'm just like, you're the champion. Why are you going over there and doing that nonsense with DDT? But that's what they do.
Like, he is a DDT guy.
I know.
It's like Kenny Omega. Like, you go to DDT, you do DDT shit. Like, DDT is stupid. And there's people that will tell you how great DDT is, and they're fucking irritating, and I hate DDT. But Kenosuke Takeshita, you know, and he hasn't done anything stupid in a long time, so I'll cut him some slack. But I agree. The night before, you're going to lose the title to act like a fucking idiot. I don't.
Yeah. Can you carry yourself with a little bit of dignity like a world champion?
I mean, I don't think that's fair because I think he has been for a long, long time.
Yes.
But just like you go to DDT and you just, I don't know, man. There's something
about going to do some dumb shit. Like Tanahashi recently went to DDT and did some dumb shit too. I get it. Like, that's what you do when you go to DDT. It's like going to a comedy show and you're just going to get into it. It's like going to Saturday Night Live or something. You're going to do some dumb shit. But I'm just like, I don't know. I didn't really look. Obviously, I'm not a DDT guy. It doesn't appeal to me. So
I feel about a lot of WWE shit too, and always have. They feel they do a lot of stupid shit over there too. But whatever.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, Tanahashi retired, and Yota Tsuji is the new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. I still have some more to watch on Wrestle Kingdom. I'm gonna get to it.
Same. I have a question for the chat. How was Aaron Wolf in his debut? How did Aaron Wolf look? That's been one of the big
King
questions.
King, I think King said that we need to watch the Aaron Wolf match. So I will go back and watch that. And I think a Siori had a match that he recommended. I can't find it in the chat here, but because chat's lively tonight. Thank you guys. Yeah, thank you guys. Popping. Yeah. Aaron Wolf was awesome. So that's the last stuff I saw from Aaron Wolf, he did not look awesome. Dave said that he was worse wrestler than Gable Steveson, but that's what Dave said, but not, that's what he said like a week ago. He didn't say that after this Wrestle Kingdom match. So JD specifically will love Aaron Wolf. Yeah. Cause Aaron Wolf's a judo gold medalist, right?
Yes. Judo gold medalist. One of Japan's greatest judokas of this era. So I assume that means that he was throwing the shit out of Evil. So I will go back and watch that for sure.
Yeah. So we're going to get to Evil. Evil's in the news right now. We'll get to him in a little bit during our free agency frenzy segment. But I wanted to talk about Matt Cardona. Matt Cardona is living his best life. he got fired from the Fed back in 2020 during the pandemic. And that man went out there and proved me wrong about him. JD, what was what we called him on Brace for Impact for
Mid Cardona?
We called him Mid Cardona. In fact, we called him that so much and used that hashtag so much that they called him Mid Cardona on TNA. Like Moose, like would call him that. And that name kind of stuck. And like all of our friends, they would go on their podcast and they would call him Mid Cardona. He ended up having some pretty good matches in TNA. He did some crazy stuff in GCW. He ended up working for Ring of Honor. He worked for AEW multiple times. He worked all over the world. And he got him for 5 years, and he redefined what it is to be an independent wrestler. He redefined how to make money. He put a blueprint out there for all these, like these people, especially the ones that get fired from WWE and they don't know how to live their life, right? Cause they're spoon fed everything once they get to that company and they've never really worked the independence before. He created a roadmap for how to get yourself over to how to make money, all of that stuff. And because of that, I say that Matt Cardona is a great pro wrestler, a great pro wrestler. Is he Ricky Steamboat in the ring? Of course not. Can he have good matches? Yes, especially with the right opponent. Is he ever going to carry like some bad wrestler to a great match? Of course not. But pro wrestling is more than what you do in between the ropes. What is more than what you do bell to bell. It's the entire package. And this guy's got it. And I'm happy for him to get back to the WWE. I'm not going to watch him because I don't really care for their presentation of pro wrestling, but I'm happy for that guy. He is winning at life. Good for him. Matt Cardona. God bless him.
I agree. He wanted to go back from jump. He figured out a way. He kind of followed the Cody Rhodes playbook, but he's nowhere near the worker Cody Rhodes is.
Yeah.
So he figured it out. When GCW was kind of at their most popular, he was a phenomenal heel over there as the anti-deathmatch guy. He did I remember he did a run-in around All Out 2021-ish where he acted like Moxley and they took off the mask and it was Matt Cardona. Yeah. And it was fucking great. Like I don't really care for his work, but I respect his work ethic so much. Like from jump, like back in 2011, like 15 years ago, this dude got himself over on YouTube and they got mad at him because he got over. So they kind of like fucked with him, and he was there for 9 years, like 9 years doing whatever they told him to do, got himself over every chance he got released unceremoniously, and just kept working. Had shots everywhere. And I'm sure he was crazy frustrated because I remember him kind of like wishing he had a job with AEW. They wouldn't give him a full-time gig. They bring him in here and there. You know, I saw someone in the chat saying Matt Cardona seems happier in TNA. I don't think that's accurate. No. He seemed pretty fucking stoked to be back in WWE. Yeah.
This is his dream.
Right. He's got a super hot wife.
Yeah.
And like he's back to where he wants to be. He'll probably retire in WWE. Like the guy proved, much like a Drew Galloway, he got himself released, worked his way back in there with his limited skill set. So kudos, man. Pro wrestling's about figuring out how to get over. Dude, Big Daddy sold a whole lot of tickets in the UK, and he was fucking terrible. So
yeah, no shit, man. Like, Sid's one of my favorite wrestlers, and like, I love Sid matches, and he was not Ricky Steamboat either, right?
No.
Like, and if I say that someone's great, and you say, well, where are his 5-star matches? And I say, who gives a fuck about 5 stars? Legitimately, like, that's one guy's opinion. That's Dave's opinion, and I respect Dave's opinion. Dave's star ratings for me, this is what I use Dave's ratings for, is like, hey, I haven't seen this match before. Dave liked it. Let me go check that out. Or cage match is the same way. Oh, this is highly rated on a cage match. Just because it's a high rated or low rated, that doesn't mean I'm going to like it or dislike it, right? I have my own opinion of it. Someone told me that Kurt Angle never had a 5-star match. Yes, he did. Like, well, where? I don't find it. I fucking said that he had a 5-star match. I watched it and I gave it 5 stars, whatever the fuck that means, right? 5 stars doesn't mean a goddamn thing anymore because you get 7 now, right? So like 5 out of 7, I thought you liked it, right? Like that sounds like a B plus to me. So like, that's my, like, Dave is great. I love Dave. I respect Dave, but that is one person's opinion about what a 5-star match is, right? What a great match is. If Dave could rate something 4 stars and I can give it 5 stars, who cares, right? It doesn't matter. It should not dictate whether or not you like the match, right? One time I thought that Jordan Grace and Deonna Purrazzo a few years ago on pay-per-view tore the house down. Like, the crowd was into it. They hit all the moves. Like, it was such crisp and clean, great technical wrestling, hard hitting, great near falls. And I was like, man, it's like a 4 or 4.5-star match. I read the Observer and it's 2 stars. It's like, okay, he wasn't paying attention, right? Like, it's just his opinion. Star ratings don't mean a goddamn thing other than like Dave liked it. And that's it.
I have a real weird relationship with ratings, because coming from the independent author space is when you get people to read books and you encourage them to give you a 5-star rating because it games the algorithm. So like, this thought is, if I liked it, it was 5 stars.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the idea that we have in this particular culture base. Right. And the problem, I think, with Dave's ratings is he will sit there and tell you it's not opinion. It's what it was like, right? Because Dave will say things like Kenny Omega Moxley from Full Gear 2019. He's like, I hated the match. It was gross. It was brutal. It was disgusting. I did not like it. 5 stars.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any fucking sense. No. Like, and I think that's where Dave, and again, Dave is a unique entity and he frustrates people. And like, I remember I was on Reddit the other day and some guy's like, okay, Dave. And he's like, I argue with Dave on Twitter all the time. And I'm like, dude, Dave will argue with anyone on Twitter. Dave loves to argue with faceless wonders on Twitter. Yeah. I don't know why, but he just does. And I think what frustrates, and again, it's fine. Dave's opinion can be different than your opinion. There's no problem with that. I think the frustrating thing about Dave sometimes is he doesn't say those matches are his opinions.
Yeah.
And we have, and it's fun. I don't like doing this because we have a lot of mutual. I hung out with Dave Meltzer twice, and I didn't say really much to him, so I don't really know him. I'm not going to pretend like I do. Yeah,
but
we run in circles. We run in circles.
Right. It's safe to say that we really admire Dave, and I do. Greatly. I really do admire him.
Super admire,
right? The people that I don't like are the ones that live and die by the star ratings, right?
Agreed.
They try to validate their opinions by what Dave has to say.
And I think,
on your own business, dude.
I think that river flows two ways. Yeah. I think the people that sit there and will say that something is terrible because Dave liked it, or that Dave must be, you know, co-opted because he liked this match. Yeah. They're, in my opinion, they're worse. Yeah. Like, I think it bothered people. Like, what the fuck does Dave know? I'm like, Dave knows enough that, like, he's been making a living doing this shit for 40 years.
Yeah.
Like, and I told somebody that once. I'm like, yes, so your opinion is, my opinion is just as valid as Dave's. I said, Dave makes well over 6 figures a year doing nothing but giving his opinion and talking about wrestling. You're sitting here on, I say, you pay for Twitter. Like, you have, that's my favorite insult. You pay for Twitter. Like, I mean, nobody, you have like 30 followers. Nobody gives a fuck what you think. And again, your follower count doesn't matter. But if you're trying to pass yourself off as a tastemaker, like, dude, Dave just says shit and the people just follow it. And whether you agree with it or disagree with it, there's no one else in the wrestling space that can say something and have people up in arms positively and negatively. Yeah. Nobody has that power other than Dave Meltzer. And I'll credit him, but I'll be like, there's a lot of times I'm like, it doesn't make sense what you said there, Dave. And you could, like, he's not above criticism, but at the same time, like, you got to realize that this guy is the most important non-major company affiliated presence in multiple generations of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, and you cannot agree with the star, because star ratings are dumb in everything.
Yeah. I, you know, it's dumb in movies. Like,
yes.
I, But here's what it's good for. Like, if I'm like looking up a movie that I want to watch, sometimes I go to Rotten Tomatoes. I used to go to Siskel and Ebert. It's like, did they get the thumb? No, they didn't get the thumb. And then after a while, I realized that me and Siskel and Ebert don't exactly agree on what movies we like, because one time they both gave thumbs down to Eraser, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Eraser ruled.
That's a fun movie. They gave thumbs down to The Thing, which is largely considered the greatest horror movie ever made.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, that's gross. No fucking shit. It's a horror movie. Like,
There's going to be, guys, this is going to sound weird, but there's going to be matches that I like that you guys probably wouldn't like, right? Like, there was a match between Matt Cardona and Jordan Grace what was it called? A social media match where they were hitting each other over the head with Nokia flip phones. I loved that match. So it was so stupid, but I had so much fun watching that match. And when someone said, Mike, was it good? I was like, okay, good is a strong word, but I enjoyed it. It was dumb. I enjoyed it. They pulled out all the gimmicks, but would I recommend it to you? You probably wouldn't like the match because it's not your style. It's not your thing. You know.
Man, I'll tell you what. I used to, before I got kind of diagnosed with celiac disease, I really enjoyed the McDonald's double cheeseburger. I like McDonald's double cheeseburger. I really did. Yeah. Is it good? Not really. Is it good for me? I don't know. But I mean, like, I just sometimes it just hit the spot. I can't do it anymore though, because they actually put beef. They put beef in everything. They put gluten in everything, even the beef. Yeah. Like, sometimes so, good is a. What is good? Like, what does good mean? What is good?
Did you have fun watching the match? Yes or no? Yes. Okay. Then it's good. And then you can give it whatever star rating you want. So you don't need anybody else to validate your opinion of what that is. So if I say that someone is a great wrestler and you come back to me with a history of Dave's star ratings, like, Dave doesn't seem to get this guy, or this guy doesn't appeal to Dave's, what Dave likes in pro wrestling. Right. But he does appeal to me.
But also I think Dave, I don't know if Dave will admit this, but Dave does not grade matches the way he used to grade them. He just doesn't. Like, there's a reason why there's so many more. Like the 1994 All Japan, Kawada Misawa match was largely considered like the greatest match ever. Five stars. And like, there's a lot of five-star matches that aren't nearly as good as that now. Right. You know what I'm saying? Again, it's all opinion. And I think this is what kind of makes you and I different than a lot of people on this network in particular. I think on this network in particular, there's a lot of voices that do put a lot of credence. Nothing wrong with that. A lot of voices that put a lot of credence in star ratings and, you know, more smart traditional-based stuff, where I think you and I are a little bit more, not fed-pilled, but I mean, like, I think we kind of are a little bit more, well, did you like it? Was it fun? Did you enjoy this? And are a little less on the academically looking at pro wrestling. I think a lot of people try to be try to look at things like from a critical or an academic perspective when judging pro wrestling. I don't think either you or I tend to do that.
You're
a TNA fan.
we don't overthink this shit, right?
No.
Right. Just like we started the show off talking about Running Man and how we really enjoyed it. But I think it's probably not going to get Oscar nominated.
No.
You know, unless it's for like cinematography or some shit.
Well, and there's been talk about the problem with the Oscars lately is there's movies that are made to win Oscars now.
Yeah.
And it's been like that for Oscar a while. Made. And it's never anything that people actually see. And they're like, there's a huge disconnect now, especially in the film industry, because they're having such a hard time getting people to the movies, right? The pandemic really did change the way most people imbibe entertainment. So getting people out to the movies is very difficult. Because it's very difficult, it's become super expensive. So if you're going to take your family to the movies, you're dropping $100, right?
Yeah.
And the movies you're going to go see typically aren't Oscar fare, right? So then you have this huge disconnect going on of all these movies that are nominated for Oscars. And it's nothing that everyone ever sees. So like, it's like, there was a time when like the popcorn movie could be the best movie of the year, right? Like, dude, Mel Gibson fell off the fucking planet. Don't get me wrong. But I love Braveheart. That was an Oscar-nominated film, right?
Yeah.
Like, I loved Lord of the Rings, right? That one movie won an Oscar. Like, we've gotten away from, like, even a movie like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is a foreign film, which was, like, you know, kind of is this kung fu foreign film, very snobby, but had a shit ton of crossover appeal, and normal people were going to see that movie.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't go to see Parasite. You know, as good a movie as that was, it just it wasn't drawing in like regular folks. And you can blame the Marvel movies all you want. People like seeing those. You know, we've got this huge entertainment disconnect right now. And I see that a lot. And I see it in wrestling too, where like, you know, if people like stuff, then, you know, if normal people like stuff, then it's bad.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I'm glad we had this discussion because I felt like I was on an island over there. But
we're pretty similar in that regard. Like, I mean, yeah. I never thought like people would sit a 5-star match. I don't fucking know. I can't tell you what a 5-star match is. Yeah. I know I liked it or I didn't like it or I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I feel about it. I'm like, I don't know. I kind of liked it. I liked it. Fucking loved it. Like, you know, that's where I'm at. But I can't put a star in that, let alone a quarter of a star. I don't know how to fucking knock off a quarter of a star. It doesn't make sense to me.
Right. It's hard to quantify how much you like something. It's like you either like it or you don't. Now, where the star ratings come in handy, like I've already mentioned this, but it's like if you give something a high rating to, sometimes I'll make sure I go out of my way to check it out. But I feel like I've seen so many 5, 6, 7 star matches. They kind of bleed together for me now because like that's almost the norm these days, especially on big pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. And so they don't really mean as much as they used to. Back in the day, you'd get, you know, a few 5-star matches a year. And now it's like if you don't have a 5-star match, it's probably, you know, you start thinking, well, Dave, does Dave not like me? like what does Dave have against me? It's like, I thought he liked it. Yeah,
there's a lot of that too. People take this, and again, I understand taking your work personally, dude. Yeah. Believe me, I've had some bad reviews on Amazon that make me go, like, but that's okay. People cannot like you. It's why you're best off not reading. Happens to be a professional wrestler listening to the show, don't read Dave's review of your work. It's just gonna bug you. Like, unless you can completely compartmentalize that shit, don't read that stuff. It's not good for you to read like harsh criticism of your work.
JD, you know? Speaking of 5 stars, do you want to see a 5-star tweet?
I would love to
this
see
is, a 5-star. This is a tweet so fucking good. I'm mad that it's not mine. And I got to give this guy some credit. This is from an account called Talking TNA. And he had the greatest tweet of all time. And I can't wait to see your reaction.
Please, let me see this. I'm excited. Here's
his tweet. He says, 2 down, 1 to go. John Cena, Tanahashi, and Fandango is next to retire.
Here's my first question. Is this serious or is this a gag?
It's a gag, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, this guy's got a really good sense of humor. He makes fun of TNA quite often.
I don't know, man. We get some tweets and some messages sometimes where I like go, what? Like I read some, I forget, someone in the chat put like younger wrestlers need the Hardys and they need the Hardys to get young wrestlers. I'm like, you don't need the Hardys to get young wrestlers in TNA. It doesn't make sense.
Who said that? It's probably one of my TNA guys. Oh, because
it was one of the TNA guys. Yeah.
Matt. So Matt Hardy, he announced his resigning. Obviously, he gave us a big shout out the other day. That was cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. But he is working. I think he's doing more like creative stuff now. So.
Good for him.
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised he wasn't already. So I was like, okay, if he hasn't been, but he said he hasn't been, and now he's going to be kind of like helping with some of the booking and things like that. So I think he's a smart guy. So.
Can't be any worse.
So yeah, for sure. All right, now let's get to free agency frenzy and let's call it a night. So there's several free agents since we last talked. So the last time we talked, we discussed David Finley already, right? You and I did. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm just going to run through some of them and we'll do some quick hits here. But EC3, Ethan Carter III has officially announced he is leaving the National Wrestling Alliance. He was there for a long time. He leaves after he held the NWA title for 370 days. So there you go.
Wow.
Where does he fit? Is he going back to the Fed? Or just not going anywhere, or is he going to show up on AMC on January 15th?
EC3, he's been beat up for a long time. I'll be honest, I haven't watched his NWA work. I remember around pandemic era when I was paying a little more attention to him, he looked beat up at the time.
Yeah.
Like he looked like he was moving pretty bad. So I would be surprised if he's moving better than he was a few years ago. I could see him winding up in the Fed in primarily a talking role because he's a great talker. You know, he's an excellent speaker. If I were TNA, I would try to get him back because like there's stuff. I mean, like, I don't think this particular TNA fan base might know why he's called EC3.
Yeah.
You know, they might not understand the whole Ethan Carter the Third thing, but I, as a historical guy, I would like to see him back in TNA.
Yeah. So EC3 is washed for sure.
Has been.
Yeah, he has been for a long time. TNA doesn't really care so much about the in-ring work right now. They want guys who can work television, and they want guys who are at least one-time TV stars. And EC3 was at one time, in the pop TV era, he was their top star for a little bit.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. You're right about that. But that's more than a decade ago.
It is. Yep.
And it wasn't WWE stardom. Like, when he was in WWE as EC3, like, he was they very famously never gave him a microphone.
Yeah.
Like, he was a really good talker. And they just, I don't know, Vince just looked at the guy and went, I hate him. And just didn't do anything with
him.
They
sabotaged him. I think the thought process was, I think I remember the reporting at the time was like, Vince just wants to know if this guy can get over without talking. It's like, why would he even do that? Like, he gets over with his talking. He was MJF before MJF. Like, MJF stole the gimmick.
It's really like the Buddy Rogers gimmick. Like, it's not like it's a super complicated gimmick when MJF is.
Right.
You're 100% right. The Ethan Carter the Third gimmick. Because remember, they used to call him EC4.
Yeah.
Right, or something like that. People used to pick on, or EC, like, I forget what it was, but like a decade ago, people would pick on MJF as being an Ethan Carter knockoff. And like, it's weird to think about that in retrospect. You know, obviously, MJF's way better than EC3.
Yeah, 100. Yeah.
You can't even compare the two, like, in the ring. But that being said, is I think that I would like to see EC3 and TNA. I don't know if they see value in EC3, especially, I'll be honest, I haven't thought about EC3 in a long, long time.
Same. Yeah. And the last couple times I've seen him, like, he was in Ring of Honor for a little bit. And so, and that's where I'm like, maybe they would bring him in because Delirious did book him there. And, yeah. And did he push him there very well?
No, they were only for one show. He was only the final show. They showed up with the Control Your Narrative thing. That Control Your Narrative was introduced in one of the last Ring of Honor.
The very last show.
Yeah, the very last show.
So one idea the chat had on Brace for Impact on Thursday night was bring in EC3 and Braun Strowman and reunite Control Your Narrative in TNA. Go full QAnon.
Lord.
Yeah. All right. Colby Carino, he is also a free agent. His dad works for NXT. And BQ watches NWA, not like all the time, but he's seen a lot more than me. And he said that, like, Colby Carino is the entire junior heavyweight division. So, and that he's actually a pretty good worker. I have not seen much of him. So
I think Colby Carino, I think he was supposed to sign with WWE before the transition stuff happened. That's what hurt him there. And he's had some drug issues in the past. I think he's clean now. I'm pretty sure he's clean now. He's been clean for a while now.
Yeah.
I think it's been a while since I've watched a Colby Carino match, but I remember really liking him a few years back. He's 100% a guy I think TNA should go after. 100%.
Yeah. TNA should, I don't know that they will. WWE might, just because his dad works there, and that kind of makes sense. All right. Now, lastly, Evil from New Japan, his contract's coming up. And he's interested in coming to the U.S. So I have a great booking idea, JD. What about the Don Evil family? You just put Evil and Don Callis together, right? Co-leaders, right? You got the House of Torture and the Don Callis family. They interfere in every fucking thing. I'm thinking that's money, right? Don Evil family, you know?
Just gonna garrote wire myself because Dick Togo's not here.
Yeah,
I would love for WWE to sign Evil.
Yeah, I don't know. So I looked it up. He's no longer with Io Sky, so maybe that's not happening.
Oh, they broke
him married.
But. Man, I feel that's a stiff blow for poor Evil. He was out kicking his coverage on that one. Io Sky is something else. That's a shame. I don't know, man. I don't like Evil. I don't think he's great. I never have.
Nobody likes Evil. So here's the thing. I have a serious question. And I think King of the North left when we were talking Matt Cardona, because he got really mad at me for saying Matt Cardona was great. He takes it very personally.
I Sometimes I think the king hates you, but like he always comes back. And yeah. Yeah.
We have different ideas of what we like, right? But I am curious of the chat, and I want to get your opinion because I know that you probably watched some of his earlier stuff more than I did. Is he capable of having a good match, or is it just the booking of House of Torture preventing him from having good matches?
I used to watch him in old Ring of Honor, and I always thought in the back, he's young boy stuff. Like, I thought he was okay. Like, I don't remember ever like dramatic. It's been like a decade. Don't get me wrong. I don't remember ever dramatically hating Evil, you know, it's possible I'm misremembering stuff, but I don't remember disliking him. Oh yeah. Ciampa too.
Thanks for the reminder. We'll get to Ciampa. I had him on my list. I just forgot. I skipped over. That was an accident. But so I've seen him have like some good matches, especially with some like really good opponents, but the House of Torture stuff turned me off of him forever. Right. But he did ascend to, he was the IWGP champion for a while. And New Japan seemed to really get behind him, but I think a lot of the fan base, especially the foreign fan base, like Americans, completely lost this guy. Like we lost any affection that this guy ever had. I did kind of like when he was in Ring of Honor, he was doing the whole Kevin Sullivan gimmick. Like it looked kind of cool. He had the whole entrance, but I was curious if it was can he have a good match, or is it just like he's not being allowed to have a good match because the gimmick is you have to have interferences every 5 seconds.
10 years ago, I'd have said he could probably have a good match if need be. Like he in one of the top, if he could have these dynamite matches all the time, pardon the pun, I think he would be. Like I don't know if he's bad, but I don't know if he's good at the same time. Yeah. Like I think he could do Evil stuff.
Yeah. For all the people saying that TNA is going to bring him in, he doesn't speak English. Yeah. He didn't speak English. Like Delirious did book him right for a little bit, but he doesn't speak English. And so TNA doesn't bring in people that can't do promos. They're not going to bring in Evil. I'm just going to nip that in the bud.
TNA booking would tell me if they brought in someone who doesn't speak the language, it would just be to do a bunch of jobs.
Yeah.
That's just what history tells me.
Yeah, which is what they did with Laredo Kid and Tarus and all those guys who were like all really good. But because they couldn't do promos, they just didn't have any time for them. So okay, we'll bring you in. You can just lose matches. All right. Speaking of bringing in somebody to TNA, Tommaso Ciampa is leaving the WWE. He's told the WWE that at the end of his contract, he's not going to renew. He's a guy up there in age. He's got a really bad neck. Do you think AEW brings him in?
No,
I don't see why they would.
There's nothing on tomorrow unless Tony wants to like just play old NXT hits, which sometimes he does.
Yeah,
sometimes Tony gets into that sort of thing. Yeah. I think that Ciampa can have some value in TNA where he won't be asked to have those kind of like high impact matches. He's not a bad promo by any stretch. He's pretty good personality. And he can have good matches. Like he did. I haven't watched him chop match in a long time, but I'm sure he can work around a lot of his injuries. And he's a former TV star. I think he's actually exactly what they're looking for.
I think he checks every single box. He's on Fed television. He's been an enduring Fed star for 10 years, former NXT champion, WWE tag champion, but he's been on all the big shows and probably won't cost him an arm and a leg, can cut promos, can still work. Can he work at the rate of that he used to 5 years ago? No, but he could still have passable matches and he can do more character stuff. And if he came in, he would be pushed right to the top.
Yeah. Like, that might be why he's trying to get out. Cause I'm sure it might be easier for him to transition over to TNA with the relationship. And he probably figures he'd be a top guy there right away.
He would be right away. Like he would be automatically in a feud with the top babyface, or if he was a babyface, he'd be in a feud with one of the top heels for sure. I think he's better as a heel, to be honest with you. I thought his heel work with Johnny Gargano. Now, I was not a big fan of those matches. This wasn't for me. It was these two little guys slapping the leg and these melodramatic endings and stuff that Shawn Michaels was doing. It was lame, I thought, but. He just seems like the type that TNA would covet. Like, you know, we talked about David Finlay earlier in the week. I was like, I don't see it because David Finlay was never a TV star in the US and he'd probably want to be paid like he was. So I just wouldn't see TNA bringing him in. Tommaso Ciampa would absolutely get brought in and they would push him right away. David Finlay would probably get brought in and be a mid-carder in TNA. Not that he would deserve that, but that's just where they would see him.
And I think that especially if you have Matt Hardy doing creative stuff, I think that's what he wants. Like I saw Matt Hardy posted that AEW should make Mick Foley the commissioner because it would just be really entertaining. And I'm like,
Matt,
25 years ago, WWE did that. WWE tried it in 2018 and it wasn't entertaining. Well, so I think sometimes these old guys get stuck in their day and they don't, and this is nothing new, by the way, Vern Gagne, you think like this too. So, I mean, like that being said, I think it's exactly why Ciampa should go to TNA. Cause I think that's the way they're going to think over there.
Yeah, I agree, man. I agree. All right. Let's close it on this. Did you get a chance? Our good friend, John Muse, recommended a podcast to us. Connecting the Black Dahlia killer with the Zodiac killer. Seems like we have a suspect now that might have committed both crimes. It's called Killing the Code. It's on YouTube. Have you had a chance to look at this yet?
I haven't, because I've been listening to my Powers of Darkness podcast and some dickhead started sending me Y-Files videos. So I've been watching those as well.
Oh,
so,
you're into the Y-Files. Which ones have you seen?
I saw the Lincoln one that you sent me.
Was it great?
We had this conversation 2 days ago, so I've only watched a couple. I watched the Y-Files, and I've been watching, I've been listening to my Powers of Darkness podcast. So I got into that, but I want to do this. I wanted to talk about this, like, and have time to prepare. And
okay, we'll table the discussion.
Let's do this in the Patreon, because I think we can get into it on the Patreon.
Yeah.
But our good buddy John Muse, who always steers us in the direction of either good wrestling matches or ridiculous-ass conspiracy theories that we both eat up, sent us a podcast that suspected that theorizes that the Zodiac killer and the Black Dahlia killer are the same person.
Yeah. I'm two episodes in. There's only two episodes out. It's a really good podcast. It's a documentary podcast series. It reminds me a lot of the Rob Reiner JFK one that happened. And you were talking about something like getting into stuff like that. So I sent you the Y-Files. Mm-hmm. This is different than the Y-Files. The Y-Files is just like one guy talking and going to clips and stuff like that and using
some of AI.
Yeah, AI videos and stuff. But what did you think of the Lincoln one? I loved that one.
I there's so much, it's hard to get past the shitty AI stuff because some of it is so over the top, but I love the history. I don't know about the talking goldfish. I'm like, you mentioned it, I was like, what the fuck's he talking about? And then I'm watching the show, I'm like, this guy's literally talking to his goldfish. Like
Hecklefish threw me off at first. When I started watching it a couple years ago. So our friend over in Fight Game Media, Preet, Dr. Preet, he's the one that recommended that I watch it. And I watched the first one. I was like, ah, man, this guy's talking to a dumbass fish. But some of the topics were very interesting. And then I just kept watching it. And then I went back to his early videos and like, he didn't know what he was doing yet. And I started watching all those. I've seen every video that he's done. The guy's got millions of views for every episode. And he gets into like aliens and UFOs and, you know, all kinds of stuff, man. The guy, and he's a super smart guy. I like the way he tells the stories. And I like how at the end of it, he debunks everything, which pisses me off sometimes because I want these stories to be true. Because as he's telling the story, he tells it as if it's true. Mm-hmm. He actually respects the story. And I love that about him. It's very Art Bell-like, right? He's telling the story from a person that believes it. And then by the end of it, he ends up debunking everything, right?
So he's got a lot of pro wrestler in him, like, right? But he reminds me of that magician guy that was revealing all the secrets like 25 years ago on TV. He would go on the mask and he would reveal how the tricks were done. A little bit of that, like, it's like, okay, it's like, or a little Penn and Teller. Should you ever watch Penn and Teller's bullshit? You seem like you might have liked that show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Reminds me a little bit about that. What's the Zodiac called?
Killing the code. So the premise of the podcast, I think JD and I, so we should probably table for a little bit longer because more episodes are going to come out.
Let's put a pin in this and let's actually like discuss, like when the show is like done, let's actually like dig into it on the Patreon. I think that's something that we could really like, because that's something you and I, like when we get our chance to talk about this kind of shit, we really can dig in. But whenever we do it on this show, our fucking numbers just fucking plummet.
We're at the end of the show now and I won't clip it for YouTube. I clipped the Watergate thing. It got 44 views. It's one of our worst videos ever, and it was my favorite discussion we ever had.
I know, me too. Like, people want to hear us fucking shit on WWE, which is fun, but I mean, it's sometimes just fun to talk with my friend about other shit too.
Yeah. So the Zodiac one is called Killing the Code, and I just say the premise is that this autistic investigator, he has like a cold case company, and the guy's got autism. It's a part of the story. And he hires some code breakers, and he actually uses some AI software to break the code of the Zodiac codes to find out who the killer was. And then while he's doing that, he realizes that the Black Dahlia had similar letters with similar codes, and they ran that code through the software and they came up with the same person. So the codes led them to the same person. And now they're investigating that person and kind of going into that guy's history. And in episode two, they find a smoking gun that ties them to the Black Dahlia murders. Right. So now, now we have to go further. So there's going to be more episodes. They're 30 minute episodes. So it's really easy to listen. I'm super into it. And I've had to go back and listen to it a couple times because I want more of the details. So that way, when we do talk about it, I can speak intelligently on it.
I really love these documentary podcast things. I'm currently listening to one about a book called Powers of Darkness. I'm a huge vampire fan, like Dracula. Right? I love Dracula. Yeah. And in 2017, they discovered an Icelandic translation of Dracula that just goes off the fucking rails. Like it really becomes its own story. Like it's totally different. And so they're, while researching this, they're trying to figure out how this happened. It turned out that there's an older one from Sweden that might have been written by Bram Stoker, another guy that, again, just goes off the fucking rails with like with this. And this is like the story of how this all came together. So I love this shit. There's, I remember I've told you about this, was a pandemic era podcast that was about how the CIA used the Scorpion's Winds of Change to help end the Cold War. Yeah. And it wound up being kind of bullshit, but maybe not. It was a great little podcast. It was fucking great. Yeah. I love those type of shows. They're awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. All right, guys. That's going to do it for us this time. Make sure you give us a like, comment, and subscribe. Head over to Patreon. Go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJD Show. Lots of content coming your way. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A main, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A main, no rain.
Do the last comment.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.